I'm Stephen John Drew from the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
You are listening to the Starling Tribune, a podcast dedicated to the Arrow TV show.
This guy gets more airtime than the Kardashians, right?
This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, situations, and stories are the properties of Time Warner. I am the Oracle, and this is your Tribune.
Welcome back to Earth 2's favorite newspaper, the Starling Tribune. I'm the chief editor tonight. My name is SP, and I have three other reporters for this episode number 191 of the Starling Tribune, starting with Chris.
I've grown a taste for the contemporary, such as plastic explosives.
I think it's pronounced plastique explosives, but good enough. And Michelle.
I have to say, the new uniforms do not impress me.
If she didn't say anything, I wouldn't have noticed anything different in the uniforms, but yeah, I do like the old uniforms better. And with us again is Neil.
I'll stay here to make sure you remain uninterrupted, sister wife.
Sister wife. It just had to be said. Something that I've been spouting off all season here, and we finally got to it. Hey guys, this podcast is recorded on Sunday, April 1st, 2018, live via Geeks.live.
That's right, SP, and this evening we'll be discussing Arrow, as well as news, interviews, articles, and announcements that have dropped in the last week that could and very well will impact future episodes of Arrow, as well as The Flash, Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Vixen, Constantine, and the rest of the DC Universe.
If you're new to the show, thank you for searching us out on the internet and joining us. After the show, you can check out our content at GunnaGeek.com. We can also find other geeky videos, podcasts, and articles.
Thanks, guys. Michelle, I think it's time to go right in, dive into it, and break down the current episode.
Yes, this episode was called The Thanatos Guild, Season 5, Episode 16. It aired Thursday, March 29, 2018. It's directed by Joe Novoa. Has done 3 episodes of Arrow and various independent films that I have not seen or heard of. Sorry, Joel. Written by Beth Schwartz, who's done 24 episodes of Arrow and 2 Legends. And Ben Skolarowski, who's written 21 episodes of Arrow and 2 Flash.
Thanks, Michelle. Now, this episode aired just this week. We are back to real time, and we had a kind of full slate, at least a 3-day slate, in the March 26th, 2018 week, starting off with Legends Tomorrow on Monday, the 26th of March, with the episode Ava, which might be my favorite episode of the season, to a live audience of 1.28. Didn't reflect how good the episode was, in my opinion. On Tuesday, Flash aired a rerun, and it doesn't return again until April 10th, which is a couple of weeks. But Black Lightning had a new episode. It was season 1, episode 10, Sins of the Father, with a live rating of 1.55. And then on Thursday, the 29th of March, Arrow aired this episode, The Thanatos Guild, to a live rating of 1.12.
Ouch!
Not a series low, not even a season low, but oh my gosh, to a show that used to get well above 2, close to 4, to get 1.12, and such a good episode too, it just breaks my heart.
Yeah, that's rough. I expected it to be a little bit higher because, hey, this is a good one. We've all wanted Nyssa to come back. It's our official confirmation that Nyssa's alive because we all theorized she'd live after Leon Yu exploded. So we should have been excited. People should have turned out. I don't know. Well, I have my own theories for why people did, but it's just a bummer to see it wasn't a bigger number.
Yeah, it was the start of a religious holiday long weekend, and that's the only thing I can point to. Spring break is often associated with this week. It's rough, so I'm looking forward to the live plus 7-day ratings that Michelle unearths eventually, because I think this will be a lot higher, because it's a really good episode, right, Neil?
Yeah, no, I didn't watch live, I watched next day, so I'll be part of those live plus 7, but, you know, they were hyping this, the return of Nyssa, and I would have liked to have seen that up, but Live Plus 7 will still be good. Fingers crossed.
All right, so the Thanatos Guild. What was the overall theme, Michelle?
Well, Thanatos, as Felicity stated and as confirmed by Britannica, in ancient Greek religion and mythology is the personification of death. And in this episode, we have the Thanatos Guild, started by Malcolm Merlyn, who wants to find the other Lazarus pits, which returns people back from death. There you go.
Yep, we got a way to resurrect just anybody that we want in the Arrowverse, because it is hashtag Arrowverse, not hashtag Berlantiverse. Bad SP.
Hopefully they resurrect Malcolm one day. I can dream.
I don't think he's dead.
I think he's dead.
Yeah. Or Raish. Matt Nable. I want him back.
Well, Athena got stabbed. Okay, I'm flash forward. I'm going forward here. And she's not dead. So, I mean, Malcolm could have had some Lazarus water stashed somewhere because it's Malcolm Merlyn. And if he gave some to his second in command, he could have had some. Maybe?
Right. I just don't think he died. We never saw the body, so I don't think he's dead because of that. Now, I know there's been some off-screen talk back and forth and that he probably won't be coming back to the show. I get that. But I just don't see him being completely dead. It's a comic book show. Nobody's ever dead. Neil?
No, they're always coming back. And there's ways to reboot. There's magic. There's time travel. How many people have we seen on Flash, on Legends? You think they're done, and boom, they're back later in the next season. And as we're going to talk about in the news, even people that died in season one still find a way to come back from time to time.
You know, comic book characters are kind of like bad pennies.
That's an accurate analogy.
The only person that ever stays dead is Uncle Ben.
It used to be Bucky for a long time, too. It took him, what, 50 years to keep him, to bring him back to life?
Yeah, okay, that is true. I was just going to go to the Spider-Man event that occurred, and you're right, Uncle Ben was not resurrected. Thought it would be, but no.
Yeah, so that one still holds true. Well, with the return of Nyssa, we got some fighting because she brings ninjas to town, and she's part of the League of Assassins. And so, Neil, why don't you take us where we first see Nyssa?
And just leading into that, Michelle, everyone, when Arrow is good, Arrow is great. And this is an example of a return to true season one, season two form, where a lot of the soap opera-y melodrama is dropped. There is a focus on the core characters and lots of great martial arts and fight scenes. So yeah, the first one is at the Thanatos Guild HQ with Nyssa undercover. That's where the quote about plastic explosives, or for SP, plastique, came from. And it was fantastic. It was Nyssa versus everyone, escaping in a shower of rubble. The swords come out, and it's just awesome. I was smiling from that first intro scene before the Arrow credit, or the Arrow break to commercial logo ran. I was just like, oh yeah, we're back.
Okay, this is probably be my first of two controversial moments in this podcast.
Uh-oh.
So the fight scenes, while better than average, were not by far back to the height back in season two of the show. You had an excessive amount of quick cuts for the great fighting. You had a little bit of too dark, so you couldn't see exactly what was going on, but it was above normal. So I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just not saying this was the best fighting that Arrow's ever seen.
I would agree, SP. You know, I noticed the quick cuts and I noticed the dark scenes. The first thing I did after I started to notice where we're going with this episode is I went to take a look at the director and, you know, did we get Bam Bam doing this? Because it didn't feel like Bam Bam's long cuts. And we talked about that in the warehouse fight. I think it was like 3 or 4 weeks ago, where he had the unique camera angle following Ollie down as he took out a bunch of thugs. It wasn't those long shots. You're right. It was a bit darker. But you also have to think, they haven't done a lot of this hardcore martial arts in a long time as well.
It's true. And I agree, SP. It's not as controversial as you thought it was, because I'm pretty sure we're all going to be agreeing. It wasn't quite up to snuff for what we'd had in our past ninja fights. It was fun and enjoyable, but not quite the same experience.
And I guess one could argue that since this is a reconstitution of the League of Assassins, that it's not the actual League of Assassins and not to expect the high level of League of Assassins fights. I could see that argument. But still, for the show of Arrow, and for as experienced as our heroes are in fighting, specifically the heroes that we had fighting this episode, I would expect it maybe just a little bit more. Glad to have what we had, but it's not going to be my most favorite fight ever. It was just nice to see again, I guess, to get to back to Neil's point. I just wanted to make sure that we were saying that this was the best Arrow fighting ever.
Yeah. Well, in this episode, Thea and Roy are going to leave and attempt number one. They're in the car. They jinx it because all of a sudden there's an arrow to the tire and the guild attacks them, but Nyssa rescues them. I was sort of disappointed that she didn't say, come with me if you wanted to live. But that's basically what happens.
I'd have a little bit of a qualm here. So if you are with assassins that fight with bows and arrows, just I'm thinking here, wouldn't you want to equip your vehicle with run flat tires?
They're broke though. They got no money anymore.
Okay.
It was a nice car though. It was a typical, you know, modern American muscle car, and I think Roy's getting out of town, but I don't know how long they had to plan this. He's like, "All right, they've sprung me from the cops. We know that the Star City Police Department is dirty. Let's just get out of town."
Exactly. Find out that the guild, well, the Thanatos Guild is after Thea because of a map, and they have to go get the map. Chris, why don't you take us through them getting the map?
Well, they have to go and find the magic box of some kind somewhere, or what it is stored in, and we're not exactly sure what it is, but it ends with Team Arrow going to a warehouse and having to navigate a bunch of traps. Traps which come into play. We touched on it earlier in the show, where the leader of the guild gets caught in one of the traps. But it does lead to a pretty awesome ninja fight we get once the trap is sprung and they basically say, hey, we need you to get whatever this is and we're going to take you. And we get an awesome ninja fight and Roy gets taken out of the fight early on for a little bit, which I thought was kind of smart because, hey, that's what Thea's emotional crutch is. That's the way to irk her a little bit, is to take Roy out of things. And there was even a nice moment there of just getting Roy back into things. I enjoyed it. I'm going to miss having Roy gone forever now.
I missed the jumping flip kicks. You know, it's finally we had ninjas flipping in and kicking in. And this is like, oh, I miss this.
Roy didn't seem too out of practice, did he?
It's not the most effective move ever, but damn if it doesn't tug at the early Arrow heartstrings.
The nostalgia comes into play. And is it just me or did Spartan seem a little out of place here with his guns trying to fight ninjas?
Oh, so you don't bring a gun to a ninja fight. You just don't.
You bring pirates.
Apparently. But that's all that Diggle has, is the guns and stuff. And it's been a qualm that I've had specifically this season when they're talking about not killing, yet he's clearly shooting center mass. I can only hope that all these people that he's shooting is have Kevlar on, but he doesn't know that as he's shooting. So
hell, they're all killing again, though.
Yeah. So basically, he's a killer.
We don't know what type of bullets, but it's nice to know that in this case, because it's ninjas, killing was back on the menu because Ollie took out some ninjas.
Yeah, it wasn't like, I'll shoot you in the knee so that you can't do anything. It was, I'm shooting you center mass or in the throat or in the chest and you're going down because you're a ninja.
Yeah, it's the new League of Assassins. It's not like the League of Thugs, the League of guys trying to put, mac and cheese on the table for the family. They're assassins. They're hired killers, so.
You don't know if ninjas eat mac and cheese.
That could be what Athena serves on Wednesdays.
Okay, maybe I stand corrected.
Mac and cheese Wednesdays, it sounds legit to me.
Oh, Taco Tuesdays? Hey, now I'm thinking this whole League of Assassins thing sounds pretty good.
And Mexicana Mondays, too. They have 2 days in a row of Latin-oriented meals.
Yeah, that's, the meal plan is in the League of Assassins recruiting materials.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid meal plan. That's how they get the recruits in there. They go, ooh, you guys have got, you have good food.
And then we finally get the big fight at the gas plant because our team finds the map And of course, Athena still wants the map. And they just go straight to threatening Star City by planting a bomb at the gas plant. Team finds it. What I love is that Felicity is like, there's no one around. But, oh, wait, now there's people. Like, her technology cannot detect ninjas. It's like, for some reason, she hasn't come up with a patch to upgrade her software to identify ninjas.
It's the same software that they use to protect the Arrow Cave.
Yeah, they don't find bugs, so I guess they can't find ninjas either.
That's right.
Neil, what were some of your favorite parts of the final fight?
Well, it was Roy's comment as well, Michelle, and I think you hinted at this as well. There's always a bomb situation. Roy just nails it. He's like, yep, there's always a bomb. It's Thursday in Star City. Something's got a bomb in it. But tons of solo fights, tons of one-on-one. And again, this is what I liked. I mean, guys, we've talked about four action scenes already. And these weren't short scenes either. The gas plant was pretty extended. And everybody got a bit of screen time. This is what I wanted. The melodrama and the soap opera-iness just doesn't work for me. This is what works for me.
There was a little melodrama, though. There was the whole husband issue, marriage issue. But it was fun. And they concluded it just perfectly. So that was fun. That was a good melodrama part of it.
It's what we came to the show for, though, was the badass fights and then the drama not taking center stage but being more enjoyable. Because this whole Nyssa and Oliver tension, because she keeps referring to him as husband and Felicity doesn't like it, that was fun. That wasn't the, here, let me grate on your nerves by making you dive into a bunch of relationship drama that's highly traumatic. This is, no, she's doing it because it irks her and it makes her laugh. I mean, that's totally why she was doing it. And I was like, I like this.
Yeah.
Because she's literally just pushing a button because it's fun for her.
She was just trolling Felicity.
Yeah, exactly.
Push. Yeah. And it was fun. And you could tell Katrina Law was having a fun time with this. You could tell that she thought this was going to be the last time she was going to get to play the character. And it was well. It was a really good episode from a lot of aspects. And I'm going to lay my second controversial statement down now, too. I think now is as good a time as any. So there is a series finale and there's a headcanon series finale and a couple of series that I will regale you with that I have a headcanon finale is Chuck. The Wedding in Chuck, that's my headcanon finale for that series. How I Met Your Mother, the 200th episode, that is my headcanon finale. Anything beyond that is just crap. This series right here, Arrow, episode number 131, this is my headcanon finale because you have everything that you need. You have the happy ending for Thea and Roy. You have Katrina Law back. You have ninjas back one last time. You have some pretty good, not excellent, but pretty good fights. You don't have melodrama. You have conclusions. You don't have the team versus team fight going on. This is going to be my headcanon series finale.
That is a very bold statement considering we still have 7 episodes left of the season.
Mm-hmm. Well, take a look at How I Met Your Mother, episode 200. I think that was about 7 episodes, 7 or 10, 12, whatever episodes before that. The whole Chuck thing, that was a whole season early.
Well, Chuck went way too long was part of its problem.
I want to give the show the benefit of the doubt here because would I like to see a bit more Barry and Ollie time? Yeah. Would I like to see Huntress come back for one last episode? Like there's other ways that they could bring in characters to wrap up a few loose ends without dragging it on. But I got to say, I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt. But not for next week, because from the previews, it looks like it's just Diggle and Ollie fighting about who gets to wear the hood. And it's like, oh, really? Do we really need to go here? Like, come on, guys. We got OTA back together, kicking butt, fighting ninjas. More of this. They could have actually taken this. And what do you guys think about this? This could have been a 3-episode arc.
It should have been, is what I would argue. They should have been building to this all season. And yes, they gave Thea a good send-off, but come on. We've been talking about this is going to be Thea's exit point at some point for the last two seasons, coming up with stuff. And they could have started planting the seeds for this threat in the early part of the season when she comes out of the coma. And it would have been a great way to have a multi-arc payoff where you're just planting little seeds here and there and it all starts to come together and do like a three-episode arc where it has pieces of this come in play. This, while I enjoyed it, it felt fairly rushed to me as a way to be, oh, now's the time, we got to rush her out the door.
I thought it was interesting after this episode. So there were so many articles about, oh, this is a surprise exit, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, if you've been listening to us, we've been talking about how Willa Holland's contract has shrunk from, last year she was only in 16. It was the same this year where she only wanted to be in like 14 or 16. We talked about when Colton Hayes was announced to be in a short arc and it was going to have a big impact. We sat here and went, he's going to come into town and he's going to take Theo with him. We've been talking about this for weeks. So it really wasn't a surprise for us. So yeah, having it be a bigger event, considering that it's Thea, a main character, that would have been great.
So you're not going to have Malcolm coming back. As I said, done with the ninjas. Let's look at what we have forward from here on in. You've got Diggle versus Oliver for some stupid reason next week, some made up reason that we've been fighting against this whole season. You've got what we call them the Cry Babies, the other team Arrow, and they still have to reconcile, and Haas has to come back, and you have that whole thing. You've got Black Siren, that whole issue that needs to be wrapped up. You've got the villain of the season, and you've got all these dirty cops and stuff like that. You're out of time. You have to start wrapping up those storylines, and let's just say that the showrunners are true, and they say, well, the season finale can act as a series finale. I'm at the point where I don't want to see anymore. I mean, I'll watch it. We'll podcast about it. But to me, in my head, if I ever rewatch this series, this is where I will stop. And this will be my happy ending.
Okay. That is a very interesting statement. Speaking about the crybabies, I want to just quickly talk about Curtis. Because he is there and he's acting all cute. And he's talking about Thea's party and like what food could be there. And we also learned that him and Felicity are still business partners. And I'm like, wait, the last time we saw Curtis, he had this look of, I would like to burn all of you with my gaze because I hate you so much. What?
It's his time with the Haas's daughter, with Zoe. That's what softened him. He's back to normal now.
And all that mac and cheese?
Mac and cheese Wednesdays, or every day apparently at their place.
The interesting thing about New Team Arrow or the Crybabies was they minimized their time this episode, which I really enjoyed. They shrunk their time down a bit. There was the Curtis relationship side. Fine. Okay, that's cool. The one thing I found interesting was that we've reintroduced Vertigo back into the equation, and that is what our season's big bad is using to put back on the streets. It's nice when you can pull back in elements that we've seen before. We've seen Vertigo hit the streets in two prior seasons in different forms with two different Count Vertigos. That was kind of nice. But what I really liked is that they minimized the time with New Team Arrow. And that was all good.
Did anybody miss Wild Dog?
No. They've ruined that character already.
I didn't miss him either. So let's get to the good stuff. And Neil, you noticed something about Roy's outfit this episode. So let's go to Roy. I know you are bursting at the seams to talk about this.
I am. As soon as we saw Roy Harper in the field wearing a ball cap, I was looking and pointing and all super excited, because if you've been reading DC Comics, even since New 52, there was a redesign for New 52 and then another new redesign for Rebirth, and the character has transitioned to wearing a trucker cap or a ball cap. In New 52, it's facing forward. In Rebirth, it faces back. And the showrunners copied the trucker cap. They put the same logo on it, and that was the redesign that we got for Roy Harper in the field. It was a great Colton Hayes episode. A slight tweak in the design of the character, grabbing the electricity arrow in midair. There was, you know, if this is going to be the last episode that you're in the show, what a way to go out.
Chris, what did you think of Roy this episode?
I got to agree with Neil. This is the way to go out if this is how we're going to see the last of it. Roy got to come in. He got to be part of the team again. He got to shoot his bow. He got to have a modern, updated look based off what was in the comics. It was just exciting to have him back, and it's a great send-off. Now he's going off to go on an adventure with Thea and to be with Thea, which is all he's really wanted. So kudos to him, and kudos to Colton Haynes for coming back to do it one last time.
Talking about a polygamous relationship, I mean, Nyssa, Thea, and Roy.
No. No.
But I am hoping, could you imagine if they Agent Cartered these three characters with like a 4 or 6 episode mini arc to fill in gaps? It's Nyssa and Thea and Roy hunting down Lazarus Bits. I'm all over that.
I'm hoping they do a CW Seed series on it, an animated thing, because this could make for a fun animated series.
Or a comic.
Yeah.
Either way, because getting them all together again to do a show, not likely, so crying over that. But a comic or something, that would be amazing.
This was a good exit for all three characters. It really was. It can't argue with it. You could argue the way Roy left before was meh, and Thea's on again, off again. Eh. We always wanted Katrina Law back. So, yeah, we get all of them back right now, and they left on good terms. They left with a good mission. They left with the possibility that we would get some additional story, no matter what format it is, out of it. And it lessens the amount of characters that the writers have to deal with for the remaining episodes, which is good and bad. I mean, it's bad that you don't have them to use, but it's good in that you can concentrate on the ones you have left. Oftentimes we've said Arrow has too many characters for the storyline and the screen time to make sure that they all get great screen time and an effective place in the story as it moves forward. So I'm fine with how it went. I think it was great. And I love the ball cap too. As they were going out in the field, I thought, now wait a minute, there might be another costume, but I thought they refit Roy's costume for Thea, and there's no way he's going back in that suit. So I'm wondering what they're going to do.
But they did have an extra quiver for him. So he was all equipped that way.
Well, that makes sense that they would have spares, though.
I loved it. I loved Thea in the fights and how she got Athena to come close and she stabbed her. And have Thea deal with her legacy, you know, being the daughter of, you know, a demon, basically, and how her and Nyssa can bond that way. In a way, they're kind of sisters, but not, and they have that very unique relationship. It is. It's a really good way to send them off. It was just a nice organic way because it made sense for Thea to have to deal with something her father did.
Yeah, Michelle, that's fantastic insight because until they actually said it, until we had this episode, it's a bond that really hasn't been explored by the writers, that they are both daughters of Ra's al Ghul, both daughters of the demon. They both have this legacy, which neither of them wants. There are so many things that they have in common, and they're both tied into Ollie as well in different ways. It's fantastic. And yeah, when you think about the potential, yeah, Chris, you nailed it. If it was a Seed series or Michelle, a comic book, God, it would just be fun to watch how they continue that relationship going forward.
And Thea leaves Oliver with some wisdom. She calls him out and says, you like being Green Arrow because it fills that hole and you realize it makes you the best version of you. SP, do you think Thea is right?
I don't want her to be right because I'm fine with the suit moving on to somebody else, whether that's Diggle or somebody else. I don't have a qualm with that. But I think Oliver needs to concentrate on the next version of his life. Let's not forget the FBI thing, the investigation is still out there. That still needs to be solidified. And Roy was going to testify on Oliver's behalf, and he's not going to be there anymore. So they're going to have to finish up that storyline somehow. I don't know how. They are going to. And I think it would be best if Oliver concentrates on one life or the other. And I think he's best suited to help Star City out being mayor right now. He doesn't have Thea as an office asset anymore. Who knows what's going to happen to Quentin with the whole Black Siren issue. I think they're running out of trusted people to have around. And I think he needs to be in the mayor's office going forward here. And I think he needs to leave the suit behind. That's just me personally. And I think there needs to be a natural progression for it. And also, we've talked about this before, Diggle can be used in other series like Legends of Tomorrow, for instance, as Green Arrow. So that's just my thoughts on it. And I could be completely wrong, but we'll see.
Chris?
I don't understand Diggle's fascination with wanting to be in the suit. I understand that Oliver handed it to him, but they're making it seem like all he's ever wanted since the beginning of the show was to be the Green Arrow. And if you go back to season one, he was trying to talk him out of it and was only participating because he owed him and things like that. So the character progression and shift has been a little interesting. I mean, up until this season, Diggle's been happy to participate in his own way, to be his own hero, to have his own mantle. I feel like it's a little forced, some of what we're getting here, of Diggle being, I must have the suit back. Well, you had it because Oliver couldn't and he had to step away. And I kind of understand why Oliver wants to be in that suit, because he's built his personality, he's built his life around being the Green Arrow now, or the Arrow, or the Hood, or any iteration thereof of it. So while I think, yes, there needs to be a conversation between those two, it needs to literally just be a sit-down conversation and put everything out on the table versus what it looks like we're getting, which is a knockdown, drag-out fight between the two, which I think is unnecessary and not really in character with those two, because they've always been pretty good about hashing things out.
Neil?
Listen, obviously, Diggle doesn't read enough comic books, because there is no shortage of people with suits. We've seen new Team Arrow pick up new identities this year. And Chris, is exactly what you said. Why does he have to be Green Arrow? Why can't he be Spartan? Why can't Spartan get a flashier suit? Why can't there be a new kick-ass vigilante on the street? I mean, heck, being Green Arrow comes with a lot of baggage, with, you know, stuff that a new persona wouldn't come with. I'm not sure why you need to be the Green Arrow, why he's so hung up on it. Heck, guys over in Central City, Cisco could design him a brand new costume with some cool things for his crossbow. It's just unnecessary. It's forced drama. And whereas the simplicity of this episode underlies what can go right when we focus on the core elements. Next episode, I think, and especially the Civil War episode that we had a few weeks ago, can show us what can go wrong when you stray away from the core elements of what makes a good action-based superhero show. And that's why I said, while I'm giving it a chance, I'm ignoring next week. I'm still watching, but yeah, don't have my hopes up.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed. I think Diggle does need to be his own hero. He either needs to be Spartan or somebody new, or a ring needs to fall from the sky and we finally get a Green Lantern. And I know, right? One of the things that happens this episode is Nyssa gives Ollie a horse's dagger. It symbolizes the cutting of marital bonds. The marriage is finally annulled. So Felicity no longer has a sister wife.
Aww.
I'm disappointed in that just because I know that that is the exit for Nyssa in the show. There's no reason for her to come back anymore. I'm glad to have it concluded, but disappointed in that Katrina Law has basically said goodbye to Arrow.
She needs to come on Legends of Tomorrow and find Sarah and Ava together, because that would be interesting.
Yeah, I was really hoping she'd come back. I mean, we're getting Sarah back on Arrow to wrap the season, so they're having people bounce between the shows. We've had Kian Lynesdale's Wally West join Legends. Make it happen. Come on. I think it'd be fun to at least have one episode where Nyssa shows up, and make it one when John Constantine's there too, because I'm sure he would rub her the wrong way and it would be really entertaining on screen.
Yeah, rub a lot the wrong way.
Well, I wasn't going for a double entendre there, but possibly.
Nice pull, Michelle. Well said.
You'll raise a little hell.
Oh, yes. So, Neil, anything else you want to cover about this episode?
No, I think we've basically said it all. It was just so good to see the original team back. So good for a return to basics. And I think once you start overthinking things, you try to manage too many B, C, D plots, too many relationships. If you forget first principles in any discipline, things can go off the rails, and this was a return to form. Made me happy.
Chris, any final thoughts?
No, I think we've touched on all of it. It was a good episode. I'm really bummed that the ratings were down for this one because it feels like old school Arrow. It had a good feel to it.
SP?
Let's talk about the Raiders of the Lost Ark aspect, the Indiana Jones in here. That was great. As they're walking through the gas plant with all the traps and stuff like that. So is it a Raiders thing or is it
a temple thing?
Temple thing, yeah. So yeah, it was good. I'm glad they made that reference there. A little Indiana Jones in there. It was good. And yes, this episode does make me happy. There's a reason why I said this will be headcanon my final series finale, because it was a good episode. It was a happy ending episode when the red charger drove away with the taillights on. That's good to me. That's the end of the series. The only thing that could have been better is if it was green in some way, but that's hard to do with the Speedies going away. So, and Nissa too, because Nissa had red.
But it worked that it was red since you've got Red Arrow leaving.
I'm not disappointed in that at all. But if I'm going to make it a series finale, have to have some green in there. We haven't had a lot of green tint in a lot of things. Like, remember the Verdant and all the green lighting everywhere.
And also, let's be fair, Oliver's not the central character in his own show anymore either, as part of the problem.
No, and it had to be that way in order for this show to continue. I at least acknowledge that. It's just got to a point where there's too many loose ends, and the people that are around you haven't exactly bonded with. Like, for instance, where the heck's Ragman? I mean, we haven't said that in a while, but Ragman is still out there. And didn't they say, like, he will return to the show at some point in time? And if that's true, they have 7 episodes to bring him back, because I don't think this is going to get renewed.
I don't think he added much, SP. And that's why I noticed, again, with the logo cutscene when they went to commercial, and it threw everybody, old and new Team Arrow's logo at the thing, similar to how they do it with Legends. It's just like, really? But it's not the Legends of Arrow. It's Arrow. The logo they should throw at the screen is Green Arrow. It should be about Ollie. So, I don't know.
Right.
Well, while this episode might be SP's headcanon finale, we actually have an episode next week. It is called Brothers in Arms. It'll be season 6, episode 17. It will air Thursday, April 5th, 2018. Oliver and Diggle face their biggest challenge yet, which seems to be each other. Curtis is disappointed to find out his new boyfriend has a firm anti-vigilante stance. I don't know why he would be disappointed, because his new boyfriend is a cop. Anyway, it's directed by Mark Bunting, written by Sarah Tarkoff and Gene Wong.
Looking forward to that. You know, it's going to be a new episode of Arrow, and I'll watch it and we'll podcast on it. So, enough said there. In the meantime, we're going to move on to the news. Live from the Starling Tribune main desk, main news desk on floor 52 of Starling Tribune News Tower. It's the weekly news roundup with chief news anchor Michelle Ely. And now, Michelle Ely.
Thank you, SP. First, we have 2 stories about the Arrow season 6 finale. Neil, why don't you cover those for us?
Thanks, Michelle. And I think we've discussed both of these while talking about the episode. The first being that in the season 6 finale, Katie Lotz is coming back. Yep, that's right. We get White Canary returning back to the Arrow fold from whence she came. Very few details on what she's coming back about. So time to turn speculate to 10 on this one.
Can we just hope she's going to smack people around about this Laurel nonsense and be like, this isn't our Laurel?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Long time coming.
And something else we talked about during the discussion of the episode. Tommy Merlin, a.k.a. Colin Donnell, is coming back for the season finale as well. It's going to be a flashback sequence. But again, No specifics yet. So we've seen Colin before in flashbacks. We also saw him as part of the mega crossover at mid-season this year. But always good to get a little Tommy back in the show.
Exactly. So, Chris, we have some news about CW going live.
So this is exciting news because if you've seen any of the other shows I do, I've thrown out the fact of, hey, I'm really considering cord cutting because I'm getting tired of the cable bill. I'm just trying to find that one catch-all streaming solution that covers a lot of what I want to see. And the CW has always been an issue because it's not streaming live on a bunch of these services. Well, that is about to change. More than 7 months after it was first announced, the CW service is finally coming to Hulu's live TV service. For now, it's only going to be available in Philly, San Francisco, Atlanta, Tampa, Detroit, Seattle, Sacramento, and Pittsburgh, which is the area that services me. Noticeably absent, though, are places such as New York, Dallas-Fort Worth, and Los Angeles. However, in a press release, Hulu says the CW will be available in other cities soon. So it should be coming to be part of their live service. So if you're someone like me who's been considering cutting that cord, and one of the things you want to be able to do is watch some of the superhero shows live or have them on your DVR on that service, this is a positive sign. And it's a sign of how the times are changing when it comes to how people consume TV, is less and less of these cable bundles and more of these streaming packages you're starting to see.
I will say I'm going to make a prediction here. Within 2 years, you will see a dramatic decrease in cable and satellite subscribers, and you will see more of a routine subscription for streaming. And I'm not sure how that will fare with the prices. Like, are you going to be paying less in 2 years than you pay now? Because you might end up paying more because of the internet speed and the data caps that you need for all that. But there's so many options right now. CW, even though they're not streaming live, they still have the CW app, so you can watch the episode the next day, which a lot of people do anyway. You have PlayStation View, you have YouTube TV, you have tons of streaming options available, and people are sick of paying a $200 to $300 cable bill. So within 2 years, I see the majority of people finally waking up and going, you know, cable's not the solution anymore. Now, in low data availability areas, like in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina, for instance, you might have a little issue with that because you might only have enough internet to make a phone call versus data stream. But for the big ticket cities that have decent internet speed and data, I see this coming. I see it coming faster than ever before.
Yeah. One of the reasons why I have I actually have a satellite is because I live tweet CW shows. There's that. Also, my mother loves sports. And third, I am in one of those areas. Right now, I'm on a video podcast, you know, with everybody. Nobody else can be on the internet when I do this. So if I do this, my mom can't be like on Netflix. Otherwise, this just crashes. So I don't have the bandwidth to do all of that. So unless it proves out here, I'm going to be one of those people that's likely to stay with, you know, my current satellite until something better comes along.
Once 5G wireless comes around, the whole dynamic changes.
As long as the data is there.
Yep. Hey, so Neil, you have an article about Stephen Amell weighing in on Willa Holland's departure?
Yeah, that's right, Michelle. So there was a good article over on TV Line who has previously reported on Mark Guggenheim's thoughts. And again, I think we've covered this before, but Mark Guggenheim had said, listen, that Willa Holland actually wanted to leave at the end of season 4. They negotiated a decreased presence for seasons 5 and 6. And so, yeah, we talked about how this was the episode that we finally seen her go away. And Stephen Amell just chimed in on this article as well. And he said, you know, frankly, the most important thing is to be fully engaged. Everybody wants to be there, and Willa was nothing short of professional, excellent, always delivered a tremendous performance, and he wishes her the total best. I think he's enjoyed working with her, and he's glad that she's getting an opportunity to move on from the show.
Excellent. I'm going to end with a couple of news stories. And first, Mark Guggenheim was interviewed by Entertainment Weekly about Thea's exit. Well, it's a great interview, that first part, but I'm going to concentrate on like the last question. EW asked him about being renewed. Guggenheim said, yeah, we're very, very confident. We're extremely confident. It would be nice to get a formal pickup. Mark Pedowitz, if you're listening, it'd be nice to book directors, is all I'm saying. But we've already started talking about season 7. We actually know a lot of what we're going to do for season 7 very early on in season 6. Right now, we're in the process of breaking a season finale that is not a series finale by any means. We're fully expecting it, just haven't gotten it yet. It is April 1st. CW hasn't announced anything yet. Anything. And this is an article from January. And so in January, it was reported that CW has ordered more pilots than it ever has. It has ordered a total of 9. We're talking a Roswell reboot, In the Dark, Skinny Dip, Playing Dead, The End of the World as We Know It, Spencer, The Charmed reboot, Dead Inside, and The Wayward Sisters, which is the Supernatural spinoff. Yes, there was an article in February that reported that they are getting 2 additional hours, so they'll have 12 hours of programming. But if they renewed everything, there's 9, there are things that are going to have to give. Either they're going to do shorter orders of seasons like they did with Black Lightning, The 100, iZombie, things like that, or we're going to be seeing some cancellations.
Or they start staggering the seasons like we've seen now, where we have Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow sharing a time slot. You could do that and potentially work some of these things out and have smaller seasons staggered about that way. But I tend to agree with you. There's a lot of stuff they've greenlit. It doesn't look good if you're a show that's flagging in the ratings.
And Chris, just to build off of that, things like iZombie that got delayed, it was over a year from the end of the last season to the start of the new one. And we were just wondering if it was ever coming back. And I think that hurts a show when there's that degree of uncertainty. You start to forget where it left off, especially like with iZombie. There was a huge change that happened at the last season. And you just don't know if people even want to move in the new direction.
I think out of the new pilots, I think there's a couple that are no-brainers. Like Charmed, there's a big fan base for that. That's going to make it. Roswell reboot, probably also going to make it. The Supernatural spinoff, just an intense fan base. That's probably going to make it. So when you start looking at the available time slots, Michelle, like you said, like 12, you have X amount of shows that are existing, and it makes it tough. Now, you take a look at shorter seasons like Black Lightning or Legends of Tomorrow, because it's not a complete season, but it's shorter, and you can get away with a good season without the fluff episodes. So you can do that. Now, the question is, can you get away with swapping shows in the same time spot for the entire season and not showing any old episodes except for like really high traffic times that people are doing family stuff, like around the holiday season, New Year's, whatever? I don't know. I think maybe they're drifting into that and then banking on their app and their Netflix show when they throw the shows on Netflix afterwards as the way to go to profitability. So, I mean, if that's the case, having more shows than you have time slots could work for them. I think it's just a matter of, does it work? They'll do it once. And if it doesn't work, then we'll never see it again. I don't know. And I don't know, are they going to premiere, like with all this Arrowverse shows, are they going to premiere them at the same time in late September, early October, like they have been? Or are they going to stagger it, kind of like they started to do with Legends of Tomorrow and Black Lightning? It would make crossovers, which is where the money is made, very difficult to do.
You might see similar to what they did this year, is everything starts at the same time, and then after the first third of the season, you stagger things out, which I think has its own problems, especially right now if you're a Supergirl fan. You haven't had an episode of Supergirl in, what, 2.5 months because of how they've staggered things out. So it's going to be a matter of when that starts up. Everyone's going to be going, wait, where'd we leave off? What's going on?
Yeah, it's only in a couple of weeks because Legends Tomorrow has 2 weeks left, and then, boom, you go into it. My concern with Supergirl is going into June, because I think there's going to be a drop off in viewership following Memorial Day.
Eh, maybe. I mean, but at the same time, they're not going to care about a one-off or a holiday weekend changing things up. We've moved into a paradigm now where TV doesn't have to be limited to just your regular seasons. Like, you watch the cable channels, they talk about their summer season, their winter season, and things like that. So this is a show that's spanning across your summer and winter seasons, hypothetically, but it shouldn't be terrible. We're in that, I mean, again, we're in that world. Everyone buys and streams stuff or watches it whenever it's convenient off their DVR. I don't think it'll be as bad as it could be.
Okay, fair enough. But I still think that the show is based on the school year, and the school year ends before Memorial Day. And that's why you have a lot of finales before Memorial Day weekend. That's a holiday weekend at the unofficial beginning of summer in the United States, not necessarily attributable to other countries as well. It's usually the last long weekend of May. So usually you don't have big shows with great ratings going into June because of that issue. Somehow, when people get into their summer schedules, they don't watch TV as regularly as they do. But, Chris, you bring up a good point. The whole DVR or app viewership might continue.
We'll see. One of the things is, like, I know Supernatural will be renewed. Supernatural, I looked at their numbers. The past 6 years, their average every year is like that 2 million. Their core audience has not dropped off. We cannot say the same thing about Arrow. And that's why I'm concerned about Arrow, is that the core audience, it just seems to be getting smaller and smaller, which is sad.
Well, they're turning away folks like us who joined the show because it was a cool superhero show, had cool fights and things like that. And yes, there were relationship aspects to it. And now it's kind of flipped on its head. Once you got all the Tumblr bloggers and the Twitter fans that were vocal about Elicity and all the shipping and all of that. And I know I've said it before, it seems like the emphasis of the show has shifted more towards the relationships and less towards the superheroing and cool fights. And I think that's lost a lot of people. And especially as we made it through season 5, it was a decent jumping off point for folks.
And in our last bit of news, Neil, you have news about the Green Arrow comic.
I do. And I just want to make a quick point about this. Listen, if you've been reading Green Arrow since Rebirth kicked off, you'll know that Benjamin Percy has been writing with a terrific stable of artists, including Juan Ferreira, drawing since the Rebirth kickoff. Well, this week, and we're recording on April 1st, so on April 4th, we get Green Arrow issue number 39. This is the first issue since the start of Rebirth where we haven't had Benjamin Percy writing it. The writing team of Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, who have been doing Gotham City Garage, they used to do Batman and Robin Eternal, are taking over writing duties. And Mauricio Takara, who has been on Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, Red Hood and the Outlaws, in the last Secret Wars event for Marvel, did Armor Wars, has done some Wolverine as well. Mauricio Takara is taking over drawing for this one, or all the art duties. It looks exciting. If you've been wondering when's a good point to get on, I would recommend Green Arrow issue number 39, the first issue of the Children of Vakar arc. So there's your little Green Arrow comic news.
Thank you so much, Neil. And that wraps up the news for this week.
Well, just as a second hit here, this is a double page spread from this week's Trinity episode number, or issue number 20. And it's a picture of Superman, and the saying is, Bendis is coming.
That's going to be such a good book with Bendis writing it.
Yeah, Bendis has been coming in a lot of books.
He's taking over both the Superman books. He's taking over Superman and Action, so he can tie them back in. And just keep in mind as well, he's also bringing the Trunks back. And, you know, a bit of a spoiler alert, if you're looking at the April Fool's Day's tweet from DC, they've said, we've heard the fans loud and clear, and everybody is getting Trunks. So they have been tweeting images of Green Lantern in Trunks, Aquaman in Trunks, Batman in Trunks. they just love the Trunks. Trunks are going to save everybody.
Apparently. But Rebirth was a good run so far, and we're just getting to the point where some of these people either need to move on to other projects, or they need to bring additional people in just to be ramp up that creativity level or whatever. So it's still a lot of DC books on my pull list every week.
And in fact, speaking of different projects, SP, And speaking about podcasting, Benjamin Percy, who's been writing Green Arrow, has actually kicked off Marvel's first storyline podcast. He's writing a Wolverine podcast, so that's what he's transferred to.
That's awesome. I did not know that was him that was getting that.
Yeah, we talked about that over on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. I can't wait to listen to that. I don't listen to a lot of official Marvel podcasts. There's the Women in Marvel podcast that's pretty good, but yeah, that'll be one that I pick up just to check out and see where it's going. So a lot of exciting things going on this summer in comics and also the independents as well. But with that, we're going to move into some feedback. And Michelle, you've carved out a couple of feedbacks for us.
Yes, I tweeted, "We love you, Willa Holland. We wish you all the best. Glad Thea got a happy ending." And Mr. James Bamford liked that tweet. So thank you very much, Mr. Bamford.
Indeed.
I also tweeted out, "I want this spinoff, Thea Roy Nissa Pit Destroying Road Trip." And Katrina Law liked that tweet. So thank you very much, Katrina.
Thank you to all of the Arrow creative team and working team, the actors and stuff, for listening to our podcast and liking some tweets that Michelle does. Michelle does all the live tweeting from the Starling Tribune Twitter account. Chris, Neil, and I do not do any of that. So that is all Michelle, and congratulations.
I don't believe the rest of us watch any of our shows live, so it'd be tough for us to do so.
I podcast during about half of them, so there's no way I could watch the shows live. But in the meantime, Chris, if somebody's looking for another geeky thing that they might want to pick up along the way, what do we have for them?
Well, guys, you might have noticed the Starling Tribune is, in fact, part of a network of shows you can find over at GunGeek.com. There's 25 plus different shows on the network that cover a variety of topics. You've got some like us that talk about just a specific television show. You've got others that talk about board games, video games, geek culture in general. There is a ton of different stuff there, and we can't very well run down all of those shows each week, but what we can do is give you a taste of another show and say, hey, you might want to go check that out. It's pretty good. So this week, we're going to encourage you to go check out episode 233 of the GunnaGeek.com show entitled Gonna Talk About Drone. In this week's episode of the official GunnaGeek.com show, the crew discusses how there may be an iPhone 10 color variant coming soon, and how there was a flat earther that launched himself in a rocket. Plus, SP shares all of his recent drone experience, highlights and lowlights. Hint, it involves power lines and an emergency button press. So you can go check that out over at GunnaGeek.com. It's a fun show. If you've been thinking about getting involved or playing with any drones or wanting to get into that hobby, SP does a pretty good drone for beginners primer in there and talks about his experiences. So go check that out, GunnaGeek.com. But looking at the time now, it is time for us to start wrapping things up. So a big thank you to everyone who did participate live in our chat room, and also to those who download the episode or replay it at a later date at youtube.com/GunnaGeek.
And remember, you can always catch us as we record live every week on Sundays at www.geeks.live. That's 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
We would love to hear from you. We are the Starling Tribune on Facebook and Instagram, at Starling Tribune on Twitter, and you can call us at 612-888-CAVE. That's 612-888-2283. Well, this brings us to the end of another great episode. Any last words before we sign off? At Stargate Pioneer.
Hashtag headcanon finale.
At the Chris Farrell.
Hashtag I miss Nissa.
At Neil Is It Witty.
Hashtag John Diggle, you have the ability to overcome great fear.
And I am at Michelle Ely, signing off with Pit Destroying Road Trip. Oracle, I think we're done here.
This was the Starling Tribune. You can leave us feedback at GunnaGeek.com or check out our archive at StarlingTribune.com. Visit GunnaGeek.com for more podcasts. Music by Kevin MacLeod can be found at Incompetech.com. This podcast is not produced or maintained by the CW, Warner Brothers Television, CTV, or DC Comics. All characters, stories, and situations are the property of Time Warner. No infringement is intended. We will see you for the next episode of CW's Arrow.